You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up tonight after 7, it's Ken Rudin's Political Junkie. Tonight, a look at the new Secretary of State nominee, a conservative viewpoint on Donald Trump, and the career of the late Senator John Glenn. That's tonight after 7 on the Ideas Network.
Now, a Pew Research Center survey showed that 1 in 4 Americans have shared a fake news story. That includes people who knowingly shared a fake political news story and those who didn't know the story was made up until after they had posted it. Yesterday, Facebook announced a new effort to prevent that from happening by fact-checking stories.
Fake news shared on Facebook got attention in the days after the election, amid concern that the fabricated stories might have helped sway the election results. At the time, Facebook chairman and chief executive Mark Zuckerberg dismissed the idea that the platform had affected the election outcome.
Katie Culver joins us now. She's the director of the Center for Journalism Ethics and assistant professor of journalism and mass communication at UW-Madison. Katie, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, from what you've seen and what Facebook is doing here, what's the plan? How are they going to try to determine fakes, and what are they going to do about it?
Well, it's a multi-part plan. So they're going to invite users to begin flagging things as stories that aren't true, that are completely fake. And then after people flag a story, there's going to be an algorithm that intervenes, and the algorithm will do its best to try to determine whether this is actually a case that should be investigated. And then it'll go to a network of human fact-checkers. So they're relying on an existing network of people who have agreed to a set of principles about fact-checking. And that's a really important element. Once those fact-checkers determine something as debunked, and they are required to cite sources in that debunking, then the posts will be flagged on Facebook in red, and you won't be able to share them until you acknowledge that this is a disputed story that may well be fake.
And who are they going to? They've got some partners in already existing media and fact-checking operations, right?
Right. So places like factcheck.org, these are all organized through the Poynter Center, which is which is a center for media studies based in St. Petersburg, Florida. It does quite a bit of work with journalism training and journalism ethics.
So Facebook is in a weird position, and this tension's been there all along. They say, we're not a media outlet, but a growing percentage of people rely on Facebook as their source of shared news. So as you see it, looking at this from the perspective of journalism ethics, what, if any, responsibility does Facebook have when it comes to fake news transmitted on their sites?
So Mark Zuckerberg is right. They're not a news media outlet, but they are a tremendously powerful platform with, 1.7, 1.8 billion users. As a platform distributing fake news, they have incredible reach, incredible power. So I wouldn't argue that this is a case about journalism ethics for Facebook, but I would say it's a case of corporate social responsibility, of recognizing what their power is and what they need to do to ensure that that power does not damage citizens in a democracy.
And I want to define our terms a little bit and narrow in on what fake news is, because people are calling just about everything fake news over the last couple of weeks. But usually when we're saying fake news, it's some person, some guy somewhere completely making up a story, posting it out there, and it's shared often by people who ideologically want that story to be true, right? It's not all of the sort of vague or partisan stories that we're talking about here.
Right. I think what Facebook is trying to eliminate are the just patently false stories, stories that are clearly debunkable. They're not trying to be the arbiters of truth on things that are debatable. So, yes, if I'm a liberal partisan, I may want to say that anything that is unfavorable to Hillary Clinton is fake, that's false, it's wrong. That's not what Facebook is going after here. Facebook is going after stories like Michelle Obama was born a man, the Post has endorsed Donald Trump, these stories that are demonstrably, clearly fake. And I want to say that there are a couple of different reasons that people are putting these stories out there. Sometimes the incentive is purely financial. So it's people trying to put clickbait out, get it widely shared, and then they profit from it. But there are also people who are doing it for partisan reasons, to try to sway opinion. And both of those will be addressed by this Facebook plan.
Right. Facebook has also talked about trying to limit ad revenue for these completely fake news sites. Is that a big part of the solution, do you think?
I think that's a very big part of the solution. And you know, not just limit their revenue, they're trying to gut that revenue. So it takes away this incentive for people to just throw things out there purely for their own personal gain.
Talking to Katie Culver, assistant professor of journalism and mass communication at UW-Madison, talking about fake news and social media, a new effort from Facebook trying to limit at least the spread of fake news and, as she said, cut off the revenue stream for people making up fake news. Katie, I wonder about the power of fake news. I mean, it's always been with us. I used to be a big fan of the Weekly World News at the supermarket counter. The alien we would see on its cover met with all the presidential candidates, things like that. Is there something different about a fake news story when it's on a social media site where we go to see things about our friends and family? Does that give it legitimacy that the checkout aisle didn't?
It may give it legitimacy when it's shared by someone that we trust. So it's information that's coming to us from the friend, from the family member, and they're sharing fake news. And in fact, if you talk to people who have inadvertently shared something, and they sort of gasp that when you say to them and commenting that, well, this story has been debunked, and they say, oh, my gosh, well, I got that from my Aunt Cheryl, and she's trustworthy to me. You know, it was unlikely that Aunt Cheryl would have been sharing the Weekly World News in all its you know, crazy hoaxiness, but things are spreading more virally on these social media networks. So it's also the impact of the near reach of it, how quickly we can share things and the tremendous number of people to whom they are shared. So, you know, my aunt could say something to me, and that's a one-on-one conversation, but if my aunt posts it to Facebook, she has 500 followers, she's just got a much bigger reach.
Now, in a way, we're all news editors, and what we decide to share and forward on to people. Is media literacy of some sort part of the answer here so we are better at sorting out the fake news stories?
I think media literacy is definitely important, but I also think having a public understanding of the ethical obligations of this, that, you know, I think the term we're all journalists now is a little bit too broad, but we all have obligations now that we all have access to these means to publish. We have obligations to think about the impact of the things that we do publish.
What would it take? I saw a quote in the USA Today where, you know, they talked to ordinary social media users and one woman saying, you know, I have kids. I work a full-time job. I'm not an investigative reporter. I don't have time to try to track down the authenticity of everything that pops up in my Facebook feed.
And that's the beauty of Facebook's approach here. And, you know, what it is finally doing with this plan is making it very easy for users to suss out something that has been demonstrated as false. So it's going to be flagged in red. You will be notified when you try to share something that it is disputed, that it is problematic. And so that makes things that much easier for the user. It's a little bit of, you know, building ethics into the engineering of the platform.
One type of response to this announcement from Facebook, a lot of conservative websites and bloggers say, oh, the liberal media is fact-checking this, casting doubts on the AP, PolitiFact, and the other fact-checking agencies that are going to be part of this, and saying they will be biased, they'll be more prone to dump conservative-leaning items than liberal-leaning ones. What do you make of that response?
Well, in some of the initial analysis, especially a very well-done look by BuzzFeed, we did find that there were fake news stories on both sides, on both left and right, but the right dominated. There were more fake news stories that were either pro-Trump or anti-Clinton than there were in the opposite direction. So yes, there may be more of these fake news stories that favor the right, but that doesn't make them any less fake. That said, I think Facebook has to be very careful about this because, you know, they were pressured earlier in the year. They were accused of anti-conservative bias in the human editors that were involved in their trending stories. And they largely removed those human editors and relied more on algorithms to determine that trending. And it resulted in fake news stories being more common among trending. So when you relied on things like shares or comments, you know, typical measures of engagement as indicating whether something was trending, well, the top 10 fake news stories had higher engagement numbers than the top 10 real news stories about the election. So a human editor can suss that out. An algorithm cannot.
Katie Culver is with us now. She's director of the Center for Journalism Ethics at UW-Madison. We're looking at Facebook and its plans to try to curb fake news, or at least slow the spread of fake news circulated on the social media giant.
And we want to hear from you. What do you think about the announcement that Facebook is trying to slow the spread of fake news? And what do you think Facebook should do with fake news that it finds? What responsibility does Facebook or any other social media network have when it comes to weeding out fake news? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation now with Katie Culver, director of the Center for Journalism Ethics at UW-Madison. We're looking at how Facebook is trying to combat the spread of fake news.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this Facebook effort? Do you support it? Are you optimistic that it will be able to make a dent in the spread of fake news? And are you worried that Facebook will privilege either the left or the right when it comes to how they enforce what they're trying to do to weed out fake news? Let us know at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Katie, before we go to our callers, we've seen numbers again and again over the last few years showing people lacking trust in journalism as a profession, as a service. A lot of obviously tumultuous times for journalism, changes for newspapers and other media over the years. Are there things that the media, and that's a big term, but the mainstream media can do to bring people home, to reestablish their identity as a trusted platform that maybe will crowd out the fake news?
So I think the news media are doing a lot to try to put out content that can be trusted. I think it's very, very difficult for news organizations and individual journalists when people use terms like the media, because we're equating the very good work that the Washington Post did in its election reporting on, for instance, the Clinton Foundation or the Trump Foundation, with something that says that the Pope has endorsed Donald Trump. So I think it's a difficult time in journalism because people feel like they're being blamed for things that are not necessarily anywhere near associated to the products that they're putting out. I also think it's a time for journalism to say, we need to think exactly how we're going to try to rebuild this trust, about how we're going to get people to value what we do. It's a tough nut to crack in this time when people seem to be very, very motivated to only find content that reinforces their own worldview. It's a difficult time.
Right. It almost seems like there's a sort of nihilism in some attitudes toward the media where a minor mistake that is corrected in an old-fashioned newspaper is leads people to treat it on the same level of unreliability as a completely made-up fake news site. Are we losing perspective as news consumers?
Yes, and I think the public has a responsibility here. Citizens have a responsibility to be consuming information that provides them facts placed within their proper context, and to be deliberating about that, that we are not just using fake news stories or other slanted coverage to reinforce our own viewpoints. We have to be deliberative. We have to be listening to each other again.
Let's go to our callers now. Michael is with us in Jackson. Michael, hi.
Good evening. How are you all today?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Well, I guess my question and comment is that most consumers of the internet realize that it is essentially the wild, wild west, and the whole concept of fake news, while well-intentioned, perhaps should be put in the light of personal responsibility. And for those people who don't have the time, for whatever reason, to consume multiple sources on different platforms, that's all right. We're all busy people. However, for the nanny state to come in and to regulate and to monitor does one thing. It stifles speech. Whether it's something that people like to hear or not like to hear, one position or the other, is irrelevant.
Well, Michael, this proposal is coming from Facebook itself. What do you think about that, them changing how they promote or not things that appear on their feeds?
Well, as a shareholder of that corporation, I don't want them to be censoring anything. That's not their business model.
Gotcha. Michael, thanks a lot for the call. Katie, he's saying it's the Wild West. Let's keep it that way. Surfer beware, I guess.
I think part of the reason that Facebook has 1.7 to 1.8 billion users and that MySpace is dead is that Facebook is not the Wild West. And MySpace was the Wild West, and people left it in droves because of things like polluted information, some very heinous activities involving trolling for children. Facebook set up a platform that is good for users, so users can rely on that service. And it's also good for advertisers. And that's an interesting point that's lost here, is that, to say that Facebook should just tolerate fake news, should Facebook then just tolerate fake advertising? That, if 1% of the products that were advertised on Facebook were fraudulent, I think that Facebook would have an equal problem with that.
Thanks a lot for the call, Michael. We'll go next to Robert in Lake Geneva. Robert, hi.
Hi. I think it's a good idea. I like that Facebook is, I think this is a step in the right direction. I was wondering from your guest, what sort of things can we as people do to help identify these types of articles? What kind of tools can we use when we look at an article and say, hey, this might be legitimate, this might not be legitimate?
Interesting. Katie, what's out there?
That's a fantastic question, and I'm glad you brought it up because it's something that I should have mentioned earlier. In addition to what Facebook had on this week, Slate, the news organization, has created a plugin for a browser. It's currently only available for the Chrome browser, but that's a dominant browser. And you can install that plugin, and whenever you happen upon a disputed news story, something that has been debunked as false by a fact-checking organization like Snopes.com, it will highlight that within whatever feed you're in. So it goes beyond what Facebook is doing, which is only within the walled garden of Facebook, and it will do the same thing on Twitter and if you are, reading something on someone's blog, for instance. So that relies on the power of crowds, but again is vetted by Slate's own internal editorial team. So it's a great tool for users who would be very busy and as the other caller said, really don't necessarily have time to vet everything that they see online.
Robert, thanks for the call. We're talking about fake news, new efforts by Facebook to limit the spread of fake news, maybe indicate that something is fake. Katie Culver's with us from the UW-Madison School of Journalism and Communication. We'll go to our callers again. Floyd is with us in Milwaukee. Floyd, hi.
Hi, Rob. My only comment is why can't Facebook attach a link to where they found out it was false and let readers look for it themselves? If people are busy and don't have the time, this way it's there. They can read it and evaluate what they think.
Floyd, thanks for the call. And as I understand it, there's going to be some kind of indication, like these stories won't completely disappear, right, Katie? They'll be less, the algorithm will make them less likely to appear in our feeds, and they'll have some kind of indication that they've been researched and found to be fake. Do I have that right?
But yeah, and Floyd could be a platform engineer for Facebook because that is exactly what they're requiring. So this network of fact-checking organizations, when they go in and declare something as being debunked, that this is a fake news story, they have to provide the source or sources that demonstrate that. So they have to link to other information that will help people understand why this information is false. One of the outlets that's involved, Snopes.com, is my favorite go-to for this sort of debunking. I've been relying on them since back in the 1990s to help me understand what is and is not true online.
Yeah, that's been a useful tool for me working here at Public Radio, but also personally. I've seen stories from the left and right come up in emails and then on social media, and often you can tell from the language a lot of the time, but Snopes almost all the time has checked it out and debunked it very quickly. So that's there, and they must have expanded their operation, I'm assuming, given how much this stuff has really flourished.
Well, they actually still do it on quite the shoestring budget without a lot of people, but they really have it down to a science. And also, I want to make clear here that we've been talking about this largely in a, you know, politically motivated fake news context, and that's really not fair. You know, the latest kerfuffle is about whether this did or did not influence the election, but this fake news is not only about Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. It's about things like vaccination and about economic concepts and about celebrities. So there's more than just the political sphere involved here.
Time for one more caller. Chris is with us in Columbus. Chris, hi.
Yeah, so I've been with a Facebook user for a while, and it's just the natural evolution of Facebook. They're always changing something to make the platform better, so it's not really a big deal. I will say, however, I am concerned because in, you know, popular press, I won't say mainstream media, in popular press, you know, Breitbart News has gotten this tag of platform for white nationalist news. And it gets regurgitated all over TV and the radio and internet, and that's just not true. If you're a regular consumer of Breitbart News and other news sources, you understand that it's just a different style of delivery, much like BuzzFeed is newstainment. And it's no more a nationalist, white nationalist or, you know, something like that than National Review. Only National Review is more cerebral.
Chris, thanks a lot for the call. And yeah, that's maybe a difficult thing. Partisan-leaning websites on the left or right, Katie, will they get caught up maybe unfairly in the effort to crack down on fake news?
That's a really good question, a really good point that's being made here. I mean, I think part of the reason that this alt-right label has been attached to Breitbart is that Steve Bannon said that that's where he was taking Breitbart when he took charge, when he took leadership of it. So that's part of the reason that that label has been sticking. I would disagree with the caller that this is just another natural development in Facebook's evolution.
And we have to leave it there, out of time. I'm sorry to leave you not with much time for that answer. That's Katie Culver from the UW-Madison talking about Facebook's plans to fact-check stories to curb the spread of fake news.
I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.